The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
If you look at the children who are hospitalized, many of them are hospitalized with COVID as opposed to because of COVID. And what we mean by that, if a child goes in the hospital, they automatically get tested for COVID and they get counted as a COVID hospitalized individual, when in fact they may go in for a broken leg or appendicitis or something like that. So it's overcounting the number of children who are, quote, hospitalized with COVID as opposed to because of COVID.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was none other than, you can recognize that voice, right? Dr. Anthony Fauci recently admitting a lot of kids are being hospitalized with COVID-19, and there are, well, probably for other reasons other than the virus, you know, that they happen to test positive after being admitted. I thought we talked today a little bit of COVID. I'll give you a personal encounter. My son, who had COVID before, came down with it. My daughter, had COVID twice. You might know people. My wife and I have friends fully vaccinated who had COVID. My wife just came down with COVID. It was Christmas Eve. And she started feeling terrible. That was whatever day that was. And she was really bad over the next couple of days. She and I both went and got tested because we thought, okay, we've been exposed. She tested positive. I tested negative, and that was great. But maybe I should have waited a little bit longer. Should have maybe waited another day or two. Because this past weekend, I felt like I got hit by a train. Oh, my gosh. I could barely breathe. My head hurt. My nose ran. I had congestion, a cough. So today I went and I got tested to see if I am positive or not. I went for the old PCR test. I've been around so many COVID people in my past. I never have gotten it. We'll see what happens. But it's been kind of a slog today just to get through the broadcast because I am a little bit under the weather kind of week, but I thought, I predicted this. I said before the break, before Christmas, I'm seeing people in football stadiums, Christmas parties, restaurants. We're seeing people flying in from all parts of the world, traveling through populated airports, being on airplanes, being with family members. I knew we'd see a major, major spike. New Year's would follow. And we know how contagious the Omicron variant is. My question is, do I have simply a headache and a flu? Do I have a cough? Or do you have COVID-19? And, is it because people have let their guards down now? We're like, it's not that big of a deal. Nobody's masking. People who are being vaccinated still are showing up with COVID-19. So, what's the mindset? How's that contributing? And is this the new normal? Will we see more of this? There's a lot of things I'm going to get into today with Dr. Robert Tabali. He's going to be joining me in a few moments. But the global COVID-19 cases hit a record. The Wall Street Journal, I saw an article in the journal describing what it might now mean to be fully vaccinated. A U.S. might not formally change the definition to fully vaccinated. They might change, I should say, to fully vaccinated soon. So what's that mean about boosters? Are you going to need a booster? How effective are they? New infections are soaring, though they are milder. They're not like the Delta variant was, right? And another question, will too many of these shots cause a COVID fatigue? So if you've got questions, if you're going through something right now, Dr. Tabali is going to be joining me in a second. You can dial in at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Will there be waves of COVID like flu? Will they come and they go? Is COVID now becoming a pandemic of the vaccinated? So much to get into. You're more than welcome to dial in, to sound off, to ask your questions, to tap into the expertise and the genius of Dr. Robert Tabali. He is an infectious disease doc, of course, from the Chicago area, and kind of our guide through this whole process here over the years. You know, over the last 10 days, I was just thinking about it since Christmas Eve. You know, news about COVID-19 has continued to pile up, and the number of cases, they've gone up with New York. I think they were reporting nearly 65,000 new cases on New Year's Eve alone. And again, Johns Hopkins University, their data says that there's been a doubling of new cases worldwide from the day after Christmas to yesterday. More than 10 million new cases being reported. So I think everyone's going to get this eventually. These are more likely caused by this, you know, Omicron variant, which officials says, look, it spreads really easy, far easier than the Delta variant. And it does not seem to be as bad. But over the last week, the CDC, they decided to cut in half the recommended time for isolation. Something else I want to talk about, too. Remember how long we used to have to isolate? That's been cut in half by the CDC now. I don't know if you know that or not. We went from 10 days. I thought it was initially 14, but it was 10 I had read, and now down to 5. So 5 days. And the justification given for that was because of, well, because of the impact of having so many people out of work, what that will do to the economy. And we know what COVID is doing. It is really, it's impacting the economy in a profound way. But the decision is getting heavily criticized by Dr. Fauci, you know, he's gonna look into it. But a lot of stuff going on. Let me welcome to the broadcast Dr. Tabali, and of course you are welcome to join us too. Doctor, Happy New Year to you, and a Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Drew. I'm sorry to hear you're feeling under the weather. You finally got it after going through your family three times, you know.
Yeah, you know, I'll know for sure a little bit later. I mean, I had my COVID test earlier today. We'll see what happens. I mean, let's start with that because I think that's a good thing. How do you discern? I mean, the lines for these COVID tests now are backed up for days. I would have loved to have gotten it after day one or two when I wasn't feeling well, but I'm feeling better today than I was over this weekend. You know, how do you discern, and what are we seeing? Are we going to see a COVID flu mix? How do you discern flu from COVID from overall just sickness in general?
Well, you first thing you got to do is have a three-sided coin, one for Delta, one for Omicron, one for influenza, and then you flip it three times and see which one. You know, it's impossible. Last year, it was really easy for all us doctors because there was no influenza circulating. But now there is influenza circulating, and there's already been reports of, you know, we've seen, doctors have seen patients duly infected with COVID and influenza, not really last winter, but, you know, when COVID first hit, like in January, February, March of 2020. And people didn't do well. You know, they were very sick and had a very high mortality rate. But there's been a report in Israel of at least one woman recently delivered a baby, and she was positive with both influenza and COVID. And unfortunately, this is going to become more and more common here in the United States as influenza spreads its wings and, you know, goes all over the country as it's happening because, as you stated earlier, you know, all these precautions that we were strictly adhering to before are breaking down. And, you know, they really, really did help stop influenza. But another comment you had about you think everybody's going to get this, this wave of Omicron is so infectious, and the incubation period is so short, believed to be 2 days or less, that I don't see how anybody's going to avoid this unless they are hermits. And even if you're a hermit on Antarctica, I don't know if you read this. I don't want to steal your thunder, Drew, because you always broad time. But they have a COVID outbreak on Antarctica right now, and there's nobody that's been coming or going. You know,
how do you explain that? That's bizarre.
Well, I read, I don't know, you know, maybe it was in the bottled water, maybe it was in some of the packaging things, maybe it was in the lobster that came from China or something. But I read an article, and I lost the citation, I wish I could find it, where these folks got money from somewhere to study aerosolization of viruses. And what they did was they put up a large collector up in the North Pole in the middle of the winter. You know, there's nobody coming or going. You know, polar bear might come somewhere close. But what it did, it vacuumed up air, and it collected stuff, you know, viral particles or dust, and they wanted to see what they could collect. And don't you know that they collected viral particles, you know, of influenza, of the current strain circulating in the Northern Hemisphere at the time? Wow. So it's kind of amazing when you look at, like, influenza, like the Spanish flu. It was named for wrong reasons. It didn't break out in Spain. But the first cases were, I think, in Lawrence, Kansas, at a military barracks. There were not too far off that, within, like, a couple of weeks, within a week or so, there were cases of the same thing breaking out in Europe. And you kind of wonder if this stuff just floats on these lighter-than-air particles of dust and, you know, floats from continent to continent following the winds. So, yeah, but that one amazing article seemed to show that, yeah.
Yeah, Antarctica, and I love it. You are on the cutting edge of things. You know, the Florona is what they're calling that first case of a patient with both COVID-19 and the flu. So we might see more of that. And I'm assuming after Omicron is gone, there's going to be another variant that will, you know, loom and peak its head, and we'll have to deal with that. Let's grab a couple calls from the doctors. We always do. No, go ahead. Share your thought.
There's a town in New Jersey called Verona, and they don't want it named Verona. And then I thought to myself, that sounds like some song I know. And it took me all weekend, but it's My Sharona.
My Sharona, yeah. Classic. I love it. Kathleen's listening in Philadelphia. She was vaccinated back in October. I'm going to hear her story. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, and I'm familiar with Verona as well, so I appreciate the song. Yes. I'm a nurse, so I took my time to get vaccinated. I was fully vaccinated in early October, had been negative. I was taking weekly PCRs because that's part of my job, is required. And then finished my vaccination, and within less than 2 weeks, I was symptomatic, fever, loss of smell. My rapid and my PCR was continuously negative. I start feeling better for about a week, and about mid-November, got sick again, at which point my rapid was positive, my PCR was positive for 2 weeks, and couldn't figure it out. And then everyone said, well, you're not going to be positive now because you have antibodies and you're fully vaccinated. Well, I got my PCR back. I'd been asymptomatic throughout the holidays, thank God, and got my PCR back, and it's positive again this week. So it's really puzzling from a nurse perspective and from, you know, just being asymptomatic and knowing what's been going on throughout the holidays. So the story that was just shared kind of resonated as well with what happened in Antarctica.
Thanks, Kathleen. Doctor, thoughts for her? I mean, in terms of what she might be seeing or experiencing?
Well, it's really difficult to quantify using the PCR test. You know, you have to know how many of these cycles that they run the test through. The more cycles or cycle threshold, the more cycles, the more sensitive the test, and it could be picking up incomplete viruses or and be overly sensitive. And there's been actually reports that the FDA is concerned about the PCR test at this time, that it cannot differentiate between influenza and the coronavirus, and it's becoming less and less useful a tool. You know, if you look at the actual science and logic behind it, it's becoming very unhelpful. If we had good antigen tests, rapid antigen tests, they would be much more helpful. Because in fact, these lines of people trying to get the tests, they're probably spreading the infection itself. And then as your caller points out, I forget your name, sorry, but the PCR test can continue to be positive even if you don't have viable virus in there any longer. And it's very confusing, and it causes us to make a lot of decisions that we don't have the logic matrix to make these days. You know, we make them, but they're probably half the time good decisions, half the time bad decisions about when he can go back to work. Now, a lot of places I know that they're having you a quarantine for 5 days now, and you don't have to get tested in order to go back to work. And, you know, that seems to be quite radically different than where it was in the past, where 10 to 14 days and you had to have one or two negative tests before you could return to work, that type of thing. You know, I taking a care of a patient in the hospital, it's been, he was infected. He's been in the hospital for almost 4 months, and they continue to keep him on a COVID isolation. You know, people won't even walk in his room. You know, they knock on the door and they open it just a crack and ask him what he wants, you know, and it's really, really, really disheartening to me. But, you know, that's the mandates that come down in that facility, how to take care of people. And we're really isolating a lot of people that don't need to be isolated, both at home and in the hospital.
Well, Kathleen, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
I hope you do well. I hope you fare well. That's for sure. Let's talk about that isolation, if we could, for just a moment here, too. I mean, Dr. Fauci's not happy with the fact that the CDC, Center for Disease and you know, Prevention and Control, are reducing isolation time from what had been, I guess, 10 days down to 5. Your thoughts on the period of isolation?
Well, it's very difficult to answer that because we don't really understand what's happening with the Omicron right now. And I'm not purview to the data, but I'm sure the CDC looks at things from a multiple of sources, and they're truly looking at employee absenteeism. And, you know, economically, the country's on the verge of some, you know, very significant economic decline. And if employees can't go to work, and if the supply chain issues, the logistics gets worse than it is now, it really will be a trouble. And if Omicron is really nothing more than, you know, a bad cold, which I for a lot of patients it seems to be so, and it's impossible to tell whether somebody's infected with Delta or Omicron right now. Doctors like me think if somebody's asymptomatic, they've got the Omicron or mildly symptomatic, and if they're very, very sick, they have the Delta. And even our surveillance numbers from the CDC, they were following, you know, they do representative sampling of positive swabs in a region. And, you know, they don't do all of them, and you don't find out whether you had Omicron or Delta. But they were charting the, the raw percentage of Omicron versus the total. And they were finding that the incidence was doubling, like every 2 days. And about 6 days ago, they announced that Omicron was over 80% of all COVID cases in the United States. And then, like 2 days later, they pulled the carpet out from under that data. And they said, no, Omicron's only like 20 to 40% of cases. You know, and wow. How did the data change? Did somebody add up wrong? You know, it's very, very, very difficult for you know, us to know. As far as quarantining, I go by how symptomatic somebody is. If they're really sick, they need to be. Not only do they need to, you know, quarantine for their own good and others, but they need to be at home resting for their own good and for others as well. A lot of people that are asymptomatic, they may never get tested, and they're out there spreading it, going to work as well. So.
All right, well, let me do this. I take another call. We'll take a short break. If you want to get in, you can join us. You maybe have a question about the symptoms. I do want to talk about some other interesting things I've come across, some things that may actually help you in the fight with your COVID, and they're natural. We'll get into that. But Robert's been waiting for a while. He's listening in San Marcos, California. And Robert, hi, you're on the air with Dr. Tabali. Go right ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking the call. I've got a statement and then a question. Like around the 24th, the day before Christmas, I got hit. I believe it was COVID-19, and I wasn't wearing the mask, and I hadn't had the booster yet. But that hit flattened me out and made me disabled from the 25th on through the 29th. And I'll tell you what I was doing differently. I listened to the station, and I'd heard two doctors say that you should take D3 and vitamin E, and then another doctor said the D3 and zinc. I was going to try all of them, but I lost the zinc somewhere and didn't have the health to get out and get them. So what I did is I continued my diet of D3 and vitamin E up until the 29th, and when I stood and up until the 29th, I was in perfect shape. I was in better shape than I was in before I took the vitamin D and E. My question is, does that sound, is vitamin D and E that strong a repellent to back that, whatever the problem is with COVID-19, or was that the divine hand of God that just stepped in at that particular time?
That's awesome. Robert, thank you. It's a great question. And, Doctor, maybe you can talk about, I know you've been recommending D3 and, of course, zinc and vitamin C, but I'll let you respond to Robert's comments.
Well, as we look back on the whole COVID, I wouldn't be surprised if one of the most important factors for someone doing poorly with COVID would be a low vitamin D level. And so people, you know, I beg all of my patients to take vitamin D daily, vitamin D3. It's available over the counter. I take 4,000 units a day. Dr. Fauci takes 6,000 units a day. But, you know, 4,000 is fine. And people with dark skin that are people of color and dark-skinned Hispanics or Asian Americans, they tend to have very low vitamin D levels. And this may be one of the reasons why they do poorly. The vitamin D seems to kind of help support the immune system so that it doesn't react as strongly. And we do know from literature that low vitamin D levels in COVID carry a higher risk of morbidity and mortality. And the same thing plays out with a first heart attack, too, or an ICU stay. If your vitamin D levels are normal, you do better with a heart attack, not that you want one, and you do better with an ICU stay. So it's very important. Zinc, you know, is used in white blood cells to in an oxidative burst in order to kill things. And so zinc's very important. And I personally recommend everyone to take a baby aspirin, at least a baby aspirin every day for 60 days if you've had COVID, because there's a certain number of people who will get thrombotic events after COVID, especially if you had serious COVID, hospitalizable COVID. 30% of those people that are hospitalized and have need oxygen, they will have some type of deep vein thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, a thrombus is elsewhere in their body within a couple of months after discharge. So it's very, very important for those people to have some degree of anticoagulation. But I recommend my patients to take aspirin after COVID shots as well as natural COVID infection. So I'm glad to hear Robert did well.
Yeah, Robert, thank you. I'll have to make sure Kathy starts taking that aspirin. Hey, Doctor, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls. If you want to get in, it's a good time to join us. It's 888-914-9149, taking a look at the latest with COVID, and I'm sure you or somebody you know is dealing with it. Came across a story that just like the vitamins, there might be a natural sweetener that might fight viruses. I'll share that story with you and more. Feel free to dial in. We'll talk right after this. Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory. Yeah, there you go. My Corona. My Sharona. I know. I'm just messing. That's Dr. Tabali's new bumper. Yeah, my Sharona. You know, my Corona. I'm surprised. There's got to be a spoof out there. There's got to be one of those, videos that, who does those too? I'm zoning out. I probably have COVID brain right now. Maggie, who's the guy that does those spoof videos all the time? You know who I'm talking about? Nah, not Jack Black. It was another guy. Weird Al Yankovic. Weird Al. Weird Al is the one who does it. Yep. So that's a perfect song for Mike Cronin. I'm sure somebody's done something on that already. Hey, if you're just joining me, it's good to be back with you. My guest today, Dr. Robert Tobolli. And look, over the holidays, we've seen the death of a lot of people. We've also seen spikes in COVID-19 cases, and we've seen just the spread of Omicron like nothing before. Dr. Tobolli was sharing a few minutes ago that there's even cases in Antarctica of COVID. I mean, how does that happen, right? Well, a lot of reports coming in that even those who are vaxxed and triple vaxxed are getting this. And one report I came across that really surprised me, it's the headline, I think it was, I don't know where I saw this. The bottom line was this. It said triple vaxxed people are more likely to get Omicron than vaxxed. And I don't know how true that is. So I thought I'd ask Dr. Tobolli. But if it is true, it just confirms the ability of a new variant to evade COVID-19 vaccines. Doctor, it's good to have you back. Let's talk about double vaxxed, triple vaxxed. Some people have had two shots that at one point was meant you were vaccinated. Now, you know, Fauci and others are saying you definitely need a booster. If you could speak to being vaccinated and boosted or triple vaxxed, and yet the fact that Omicron somehow seems impervious to some of these vaccines, I'd love to know that. And we're seeing also people who are vaccinated or not getting the triple vax being, you know, they're losing their jobs. I mean, the military is a classic example of that. But your thoughts, Doctor, on those points, if you could. Then we'll grab a few phone calls.
Well, the military is an interesting situation. I mean, I think they fired about 1,000 or 2,000 Marines just last week for not getting vaccinated. And the Defense Department has not given, to my understanding, they haven't given one religious exemption on the vaccines. And it seems like, you know, there might be ulterior purposes, but Lloyd Austin, you know, the actual head of the Defense Department, you know, the head of the Pentagon, so to speak, and so on, he's fully vaccinated and boosted, you know, three vaccines. He got coronavirus. And so, you know, we all hope that he does well. But, you know, the Omicron is vaccine evading. It's the immune protection that you get from the vaccine is evaded by the Omicron because it's mutated to the point where the things that the vaccine creates to protect you from the virus don't stick to the Omicron. So the protection you get is for the other variants, including Delta. And if people ask me, well, you know, because Omicron's going around and, you know, why should I get vaccinated now? Well, if you have underlying medical conditions, if you're older, if you're overweight, have harder lung problems, history of an organ transplant or cancer, I'd strongly recommend that you consider getting vaccinated, strongly consider, because it's very protective of against serious illness and death in persons that get the other variants. Now, it appears that Omicron might be like a super, super, super bad cold for some people, but the Delta variant is just wicked bad. And, you know, I have a lot of experience walking in and out of rooms with people and, you know, and really sad, you know, sad situations. But if you're really reluctant to get a vaccine because you're worried about the side effects of the messenger RNA vaccines, mm-hmm. my long-awaited proclaimed favorite vaccine, the Novavax, hopefully the wait will be over soon because they dropped their data at the FDA on New Year's Eve. And wow. So within a month, within 30 days, they'll be applying for an emergency use authorization. Really hope it goes through because here's a vaccine. It actually has, believe it or not, it has activity against the Omicron. It provides some activity against that more than the other vaccines, far more than the other vaccines. But very, very protective and very, very low side effects. Wow. So the side effects we see with like Pfizer and Moderna, you know, the myocarditis, the clotting issues, you know, all these other things, neurologic issues that people get, they have not been present with the Novavax. And it's an old type of vaccine technology. It's not messenger RNA. It's very similar to a hepatitis B vaccine, if you've ever had a hepatitis B vaccine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, I'm I'm very excited, and I hope it comes out because a lot of people that are losing their jobs because they're not vaccinated, I think they'll embrace this vaccine, as I would recommend them to do, because it's a very good alternative.
You know, I think Laura is in Lyle, Illinois. I think she's got a question regarding Novavax. Laura, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Dabali.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question was just answered because I heard yesterday on the radio about Novavax. So I'll just get off so other people can ask their questions. So thank you, doctor.
You got it. Well, doctor, that's good news. Go ahead, doctor. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say you're welcome to the caller and to tell her that my daughter went to Bennett Academy, and it's one of the hidden gems of Lyle, Illinois. It's a great, awesome. Great school.
Yeah, that Novavax, though, I mean, I know some people who aren't getting the vaccine, period, but this will be an old. So the Omicron variant, there's some activity against that in this. Now, this is an ethical vaccine, right? It's not been tested or even developed in, aborted fetal cell lines. So what's different about this that makes this more effective than, Pfizer or Moderna or Johnson & Johnson?
Well, for full disclosure, I'm not a vaccine development expert, but my understanding is that, it's definitely not made or constructed using aborted fetal cell lines or anything like that. It's actually raised in moth larvae, believe it or not. And but it was initially tested slightly, minimally tested against, some of those cell lines that the messenger RNA vaccines were tested against. But the testing was not as extensive. So, but it did do that. But so it's not, for some people's taste, it's not ethical enough. I consider it to be an ethical acceptable. There's a lot of people who won't get vaccinated because of the vaccine technology. They say this is a genetic therapy and so on. Well, the Novavax is nothing like that. It's the old type of vaccine. They make these little protein spikes. They assemble themselves, and that's the vaccine along with an immune intensifier.
Yeah, I just read an article over the holidays. I think it was posted National Catholic Register. I'm not sure where I saw this. Maybe I could give it to Maggie to get posted. But it was a physician's open letter to fellow Catholics on the COVID-19 vaccine and treatments. And she goes through the whole mRNA technology and why, people are so concerned about it. She says this, and I'll quote just a line out of it. A brief biology review is in order here, she says. As much of the initial concern I have heard from parents and patients as well as from friends was due to mistaken fear that injecting mRNA into our muscles could somehow change our own unique genome. This simply cannot happen. She says messenger RNA RNA, it's just a molecule that tells the body how to make proteins. And once a protein is made, then the mRNA is degraded and passes out of the body with other waste products. And it's a process that only occurs in one direction. There is never a chance of modification of the vaccine recipient's own genome as the process of transcription and translation, blah, blah, blah. I won't go through the rest of it. But the bottom line, she's saying, hey, it's safe. I mean, it's a new technology. We're probably going to be seeing a lot more of it in the development of other vaccines. I want to grab more phone calls. But before I do, I really want you to address mRNA because I can understand the ethical concerns some people may have, although the church has said with all these other vaccines, if they're your only alternative, it's ethical. The proximity to the evil act, the remoteness is far enough removed. So you can, in good conscience, get the vaccines. The Pope, the USCCB, they've gotten their vaccines and they've championed these. But mRNA, that's the other reason. People are saying, oh, it's new technology. I'm concerned. I don't know what the byproduct of this will be long term. We're looking at a human study group here. Your thoughts on mRNA technology, doctor? I'd love to hear what you had to say. That physician went into greater detail. I just gave you a paragraph from what she said, but your thoughts.
Yeah, that was a pretty comprehensive article. I think that's George Weigel's daughter, the famous author, Catholic author Weigel. And she's been kind of hit hard on that because her husband actually, I guess, somehow works in the pharmaceutical industry. But I do believe her article was honest and forthcoming. and she was just trying to be of assistance in clarifying the issues surrounding it. In order for the messenger RNA vaccine to actually be incorporated into human DNA, there'd have to be the presence of a retrovirus, something that actually picks up RNA and then plugs it into DNA. And the most famous one of those is HIV. And in the trials that were conducted, Pfizer and Moderna both enrolled a broad section of patients, diabetes, renal failure patients, and HIV-positive patients. And even in the patients, in the presence of people that had active, you know, substantial amounts of retrovirus in their body, and there's only a few of them that are known to humans, but the HIV is by far the most common, there was no evidence of that happening. Could it happen somehow, some way to, you know, I guess it's conceivable, but it's not something that, you know, in all honesty, the technology appears to favor at all. You know, like, what I'm saying, could a virgin birth happen? Yes, because it did. We believe and accept that. But I really don't think that this messenger RNA has any chance or likelihood of being incorporated in DNA. Are there effects of the messenger RNA vaccine on other immunological cell functions? That's an area of concern that people have raised, and that's being looked at. I have seen quite a few people get this vaccine and then have reactivation shingles. But I've seen people get the shingles vaccine, which is not a real live virus. They get the Shingrix or the shingles vaccine, and they get reactivation shingles. Not common, but it happens. I do have a number, because I see the patients at the small end of a funnel, and like family doctors, they see a lot of patients, but I see the infection and the complication stuff that comes from a wide arena into my office. And I have seen a number of people that have had neurologic issues and have had side effects from the vaccine and reactivation shingles and so on. But I would have to say that that's a small fraction of the actual number of people that get the vaccine. And I anticipate, knowing what I do about the vaccines, that the people that get the Novavax would have even a far less side effect profile than the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines.
Yeah, and I know you've been waiting for that for a while. Just to follow up here, and then let's jump into the calls. If you've already had your vaccination, you have two shots, your Pfizer, your Moderna, maybe your Johnson & Johnson, and you want to get boosted, Novavax, is that a good choice?
Well, the mixing and matching article that came out to support mixing and matching, they actually tested Novavax, and they found that it was very potent in mixing and matching to boost immunity if you had a different vaccine series as your initial vaccine. It wasn't quite the best. The Pfizer was actually the best, but the Novavax was a very, very close to that. The trade-off with the efficacy versus the side effects is very good, I think, because the messenger RNA vaccines, the more times you get exposed to the vaccine or the more times you get boosted, the more likely you are to have a side effect. However, the boosting shots are now half the strength of what the vaccination level shots were. It's less likely to get a side effect. Yeah. And in a recent study with children for boosting, it's only a few hundred children they studied, but none of the kids that got the reduced dose boosting vaccines got any side effects like myocarditis. So,
let's do this. Kurt is listening in Wausau. Let's jump into the phones. Kurt, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Actually, just kind of touched on what the question I had, but if you would, that was the question, if you'd had one shot or the full series of the Moderna or Pfizer, could you transition into Novavax, and how long should you wait prior to making that transition?
Good call.
Well, you know, they've been talking about 6 months initially, and that's how the vaccine was approved. But, you know, the data looks like that if you're going to follow that boosting regimen, that it should be every 4 to 3 months, actually. And, if we're not having a high incidence of COVID, then getting a booster is not as important. But if you have underlying immunological issues like described before, cancer, organ transplant, diabetes, end-stage renal disease on dialysis, things like that, those are folks that should be boosted probably. I think currently they're only allowing every 6 months, but probably within the next month or two they're going to be changing that to 4 months with patients who have an immune-compromising condition. Me personally, I personally don't recommend the booster shots to kids, or excuse me, the vaccines to young children, because their risk of side effects from the vaccine is actually statistically greater than their risk of issues with getting natural COVID as we know it. Now, there could be another strain that come and have a predilection towards children that might be devastating. I don't know. Right now, that's not the case. But so a lot of doctors and doctordom and pediatricians and family doctors would probably agree with me that you want to protect your kids, and God help us all if we suffer the loss of a child. But I'm not sure that the vaccine for children is really the right decision, because the children, they get infected, they get over it, and it's far less likely to kill a child than influenza. And not everybody's out vaccinating their children for influenza every year, but we've already have, I think, 4 or 6 influenza deaths in the United States this year of pediatric patients. Yeah. But when you get infected with natural infection, I've explained this before, you get antibodies to a wide array of parts and fragments of the virus. But when you get the vaccine, you only get antibodies to one specific region of the virus. And that kind of trains your immune.
Yeah, I got to hold you there for just a quick second. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll talk more. Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory. Well, it's good to be back with you again. I mean, I missed you over the break, but we're live and into a new year. If you have missed any of the conversation we're having right now with Dr. Robert Tabali about the latest with Omicron and COVID-19 and some of the new announcements made by the CDC and the FDA and vaccines and so much more, you can always visit our archives. Maggie will put up our broadcast. You can check it out in our podcasts probably about an hour or two after we're off the air, and you can share it or just re-listen to it again. Talking about a lot of different things, Novavax, a new alternative, another vaccine making it possibly to America. We'll see if it gets approval. Doctor, I want to go to the phones, grab a bunch of calls for you. We got a lot going on here. Let's jump right back to the phones, and Phoenix, Arizona is on deck. Joe, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Greetings. Good to be with you guys.
Thanks. Go right ahead, Joe. Good to have you.
I'm sitting here enjoying 65 degrees and sunshine in Phoenix. I'm not sure what you guys got up there, but
I've got about 1 degree in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where I'm broadcasting from today. So it's cold.
Yeah, I watched the game last night. You know, it's nice and cold up there.
Yeah, it was brutal. Anyway, that's for sure.
My question for the doctor is: could you give us some analogies or some comparisons to polio? What happened during the 40s and 50s and 60s that everybody wanted a vaccine, and the government didn't have to wait too long to hand it out? Can you make any analogies or comparisons? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Well, that's kind of a good comparison, but I know that stories that my mother would tell me about polio, when someone in the area would, when the children would get it, initially they didn't know how it was transmitted, and everything would shut down, and it would paralyze entire communities, entire towns. And then, it was discovered that it was actually transmitted through through fecal oral transfer. So swimming pools and so on were particularly good spreaders. So even if you were hygienically clean, you know, some virus could spill off of the, you know, the anal area and into the water, and the other children could get polio. And one of my docs in medical school, family practice doctor, he had polio and wore a brace every day. He had polio as a child. My mother, apparently she got polio, but she didn't have any significant issues from it. But that's it's an enteroviral infection. And, you know, I did a fellowship at the University of Michigan, and the Department of Medicine, we would always go to the front of the building where the announcement was made that they had a polio vaccine. You know, it was kind of one of these moments in time. You know, they went out on the steps and announced it, and it was kind of like a, you know, a famous picture. But the world, you know, breathed a sigh of relief then. And, you know, this horrible scourge upon mankind kind of came under the wing of the of this inactivated virus. And what they did was they took the virus and they grew it and they kind of killed it. And then they were looking for what they call an adjuvant, an immune intensifier. They finally found a combination that provoked significant immunity in children. And then, you know, people would crawl over one another to get the vaccine for their children to try to protect them with good reason. And then we changed to this oral attenuated live vaccine that would give immunity at the surface where the germ would actually initially grow inside the gut. And polio became so uncommon that in the world, natural cases of polio, so uncommon that the very rare incidence of children having vaccine-associated polio, where you take the vaccine and their immune system wasn't good enough to stop even this very weakened strain, and they would develop a case of polio and develop neurologic damage. And so now we don't give that vaccine anymore. We only give the inactivated vaccine, so there's zero chance of developing polio. But with any vaccination, with any viral infection, there's a risk, a small risk, of getting Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is an immunological reaction. For vaccines, it's usually, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 to 9 million, depending on the vaccine and who you read on the incidence. It's a very uncommon thing. Some people get very serious cases of Guillain-Barré. Other people get very, very mild cases. I have a case that I think about every time I recommend a vaccine to someone. One of my doctor friends, this was back maybe 20 years ago, he asked me, my son's going to college. Any vaccines I should give him? I said, well, you know, he should get the meningitis vaccine because that's the thing that people, you know, get in college living in the dormitory. So he gave his son the meningitis vaccine, and his son ended up on a ventilator. And I thank God, you know, he did well. Now he's a doctor. You know, I think he's a neurologist, actually, a brain and spinal cord doctor. But, you know, you never know. It's just like COVID. You never know how bad it's going to be. And you never know how mild it will be or who's going to get sick or how bad. And if I can tell people, please, one thing, take your vitamin D, take zinc every day. But please establish a relationship with a doctor. And if there's certain medicines that you think you might need if you get COVID, and if that doctor will prescribe them for you, whether it be an antibiotic or other things, ask them for a prescription now so you can have the medicine on your shelf at home. And don't wait until 3 or 4 days into this thing and try to establish a relationship with a doctor, because at that point the doctor really might not be able to help you. I've had quite a few people calling me, you know, and they're afraid they might have to go to the hospital and be on a ventilator and such. And that's not the time to establish a relationship with a doctor. It's before you get sick.
Well, let's do this, doctor. I want to thank everyone who's been holding patiently. I know there's so many people waiting to speak to you. Let me grab Anna in Los Angeles. Her husband just tested positive, I think, for COVID. Anna, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Drew, and good afternoon, Dr. Tavali. Happy New Year. I will try to make my question quick. So my husband tested positive the day after Christmas, and I tested negative. I have had very mild symptoms, really just a sore throat, And the urgent cares are all inundated. There is no at-home test I can buy. Should I try again? Because I'd love to know if I got it and also if I have the antibodies.
I was in the same situation. My wife had COVID over the holidays. You know, I had to wait 5 days to get tested. Today, I just got tested. Doctor, you have a minute to answer her. Should she go or just, you know, battle through it? What do you suggest?
Well, it depends how important it is to you. I mean, I would tell you to treat yourself as if you had COVID, taking the vitamin D and the aspirin and the zinc and so on, the vitamin C. But if you really, really, really want to know, then you might want to make the effort to get tested. But in my world, almost everybody that's in a household, you know, gets COVID from one another. And oftentimes the testing, you know, could possibly be falsely negative. Maybe in Drew's case in the past. how important it is to you to know.
Thank you, Doctor, for being here. Always good to talk to you. I'm so grateful for your expertise, and we'll stay on top of this. Say a prayer for Dr. Tabali. You can check him out at germbusters.com. Till tomorrow, may God bless you.